This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
We often think of home as a place of safety and comfort, but the way our homes are built, maintained, and even located can affect our health more than we realise. Poor ventilation, mould, pests, damp, lack of natural light or even noise from outside, all of these can take a toll both physically and mentally. And to explore the hidden ways our homes influence our well-being, I'm joined by Kate Mason, Senior Research Fellow at the Melbourne School of Population and Global Health at the University of Melbourne. Kate, welcome to Drive.
Hi, Warren. Thanks for having me on today.
When people hear homes affect health, what are the main issues that come to mind and what does the research say are the biggest culprits?
Yeah, so housing's really important for our health, and there's lots of ways that both our physical and our mental health can be either harmed or supported by the way, homes that we live in. And I think most of us sort of know this intuitively, don't we? We try to keep our homes clean and hygienic, and we fill our homes with things that make us feel good and boost our kind of mental well-being. But in terms of what the research evidence says about how housing can harm our physical health, some of the big ones are damp and mould and temperature. So if we think about it, one of the most basic and important functions of housing is shelter, to protect us from harsh outdoor conditions like hot and cold temperatures and from the rain. And so if we start with temperature, that's actually there's actually a pretty narrow temperature range that our bodies are comfortable in. And when we're exposed to temperatures outside that range, then it puts our bodies under physiological stress and they have to work hard to maintain the right internal temperature we need. And that can take a toll when it's happening repeatedly. And so there's been studies that have shown that when people are exposed to cold indoor temperatures, and it doesn't even have to be very cold, we're just talking about below about 18 degrees, that can lead to elevated blood pressure. And so if you've got persistently high blood pressure, I'm sure your listeners and you know that that's a major risk factor for heart disease and stroke and type 2 diabetes. So cold housing is definitely bad for your health. And then at the other extreme, when we have heat waves, there's an elevated risk of dehydration, heat stress, disrupted sleep. And among older people, we even see a large number of excess deaths during heat waves. And that's the consequence of not being able to keep cool enough, not just out and about, but inside people's homes too.
I didn't realise that 18 degrees, sort of if you're living below 18 degrees, that it would affect your health. And I'm just thinking, you know, with the cost of living pressures at the moment, heating can be quite expensive. That must be a lot of people that are suffering health problems unnecessarily.
Yeah, absolutely. We know that people make, when money's tight, many households make trade-offs. They'll go without other things some months so they can cover the rent or the mortgage. And that can be bad for your mental health, but it might also be bad for your physical health if it means you're putting up with a cold home in order to save money on your energy bills, or if you're an older person and you're not turning on the aircon on a hot day, for example. Yeah.
What about things like noise, crowding, lack of natural light? How do they affect mental health in particular?
So these are all important too, and they can affect physical and mental health. In terms of mental health, there's evidence that noise from traffic or noisy neighbours, level crossings, that sort of thing, noise coming from outside can activate stress pathways in the body, and that can influence mental and physical health over time. One way that is thought to work is through disrupting your sleep. Even if you don't actually wake up, noise can affect the depth and the quality of your sleep, and that puts your body under stress. Did you mention crowding? I think it's not inherently problematic to have a large number of people in a household, but the issue is about having enough space for everyone. So overcrowding in homes is important because it can help spread viruses. It can affect residents' ability to get enough sleep again, enough privacy, and all of those things can feed into mental health too. Yeah.
Kate, what about things like ventilation and indoor air quality? Are they often overlooked, and what impact do they have on everyday health and wellbeing?
Yeah, so ventilation is really important when we talk about damp and mould. That can, inadequate ventilation or not enough airflow can let moisture build up inside. And damp and mould can also come when moisture is getting inside from the outside. So if there's damage during storms and floods or poor building materials or construction floors. And when you get increased moisture and humidity inside, and it's not getting out because you haven't got enough ventilation, that encourages mold and bacteria to grow. And there's lots of scientific evidence that being exposed to damp and molding mouldy homes can exacerbate asthma symptoms. It can increase your risk of allergies. It can increase your risk of respiratory illnesses like bronchitis.
We're chatting with Kate Mason from the University of Melbourne about how our homes, from mould to air quality, noise and design, can have a real impact on our health. Kate, I'm just thinking about renters, especially. What are the added pressures of living in homes that you can't easily modify or improve? I mean, your homeowners, for example, we can go in and increase the ventilation or, you know, take action, increase the natural light, the heat, etc. But what about renters?
Yeah, I think this is the big issue at the heart of a lot of this, Warren. It's all well and good to let people know what things about their homes could be bad for their health, but if you can't necessarily do much about it because you don't own your home, then that's not particularly useful. Renters can't do the retrofitting that is needed to make a lot of existing homes healthier. So I think it's actually really important that landlords and real estate agents understand and take responsibility for the ways that their properties could be affecting the health of the people living in them. But just because someone's renting their home, it doesn't mean they shouldn't be safe from health hazards at home. So I would actually just say to any of your listeners who are landlords, make sure you're aware of the potential health risks that your property could pose to renters beyond just the minimum standards that are required by law. And consider what you could do to make the property healthier. And also be aware that renters are often reluctant to mention problems for fear of getting hit with a rent increase. So if you're a landlord, you might not necessarily know if your tenant is struggling to afford to keep the house warm in winter, or they can't sleep on hot nights in summer because there's no aircon or ceiling fan in the bedroom. Or you might not know that they've got asthma that's being made worse by some damp problem you don't know about.
And also, Kate, there's also issues of stigma surrounding certain things as well. That's talking about damp, pests, or even unsafe housing. What does that do, I suppose, to the mental well-being of tenants when they perhaps feel a bit embarrassed because of the stigma associated with having a mouldy house?
Yeah, that's a really great point. It's not really one I can speak directly to in terms of the evidence, but specifically in relation to those issues. But stigma in general in various other forms has been shown to have really negative effects on people's mental health. So I think there's no reason that wouldn't also apply in relation to housing, for sure.
What about children and older people? They're particularly vulnerable. How do unhealthy homes affect them differently?
Yeah, so kids and also people who are immunocompromised are especially at risk of damp and mould problems. And so are people who already have respiratory problems, lung disease. And then older people are at particular risk when it comes to temperature. So as we get older, we're less able to regulate our own body temperature as well. And that means that we're more vulnerable when, you know, there's really hot or cold days. So it's especially important that older people's homes can be kept cool enough in summer and warm enough in winter, whether that's through efficient heating and cooling systems or through building design and retrofitting. That means we don't need to rely so much on expensive, energy intensive aircon and heating.
What practical steps can we do without having to go to great expenses that can help improve our home and reduce the risk of to our health?
Yeah, so if you can modify your home, great. Look into, you know, improving your insulation and other retrofitting that can help regulate the temperature. Studies have shown that installing insulation and efficient heating and cooling can significantly reduce blood pressure. But at a smaller scale, whether you're a renter or an owner-occupier, making sure you've got good airflow through your home, so open windows when you can, especially if you're cooking or drying clothes indoors. Open more than one window so you're getting air flowing through the house. That helps to clear out the build-up of any mold spores and other pollutants as well that are coming from, like, gas appliances, toxic chemicals from cleaning products. All those sorts of things. You can use a dehumidifier if your home's prone to damp. Making sure your aircon and heating systems are cleaned and maintained and checked for safety, because you can get build up of dust and mold and bacteria in those. And if you've got issues and you're renting, report the problems to your real estate agent. And if you think they might be affecting your health, let them know that too, I guess.
Kate, great chat. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That was our Senior Research Fellow Kate Mason from the Melbourne School of Population and Global Health at the University of Melbourne.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.